the first in our series of, let me just read the flyer, Seder Secrets, physical, spiritual, mystical preparation for Pesach. But this first class is going to be the physical, very physical. And we're going to actually go through some halacha and some procedure and some ideas. Let me just first put it into context, though, spiritual context, which I did put here, Flipping Your Kitchen Without Flipping Out, is the title of the longer pages. So the first thing is cleaning out your ego with the chametz. So we do understand that chametz and ego go together. That the difference between chametz, leavened products, and matzah, unleavened product, besides the halachic differences, and we can talk about the halachic too. I want to make sure I don't repeat myself for people who aren't aware, but whatever. So the halachic, right? Halachic differences really, anything made out of wheat, rye, oats, barley, or spelt. Those are the five grains that can become chametz.
Gluten.
Pardon?
That's gluten.
Gluten. Well, except for oats are actually gluten-free.
But except they're in the fields with wheat.
Correct.
Contaminants, you have to buy gluten-free.
Correct.
Oats.
Unless you buy the Bob's Red Mill gluten-free oats. Then you can have that, yeah. So, but otherwise, the other four grains have gluten. But if you are gluten-sensitive, you can buy the oat matzah, which is gluten-free. But meanwhile, any one of those five grains that come into contact with the water for more than 18 minutes before it's fully baked, from touch to fully baked, is called chametz. So the difference between matzah and bread is really time and air, right? That's what makes it soft. So the air, hot air particularly, which equals ego, right? That puffs us up. We're puffed up by our ego. So part of Pesach preparations is to remove the ego from our lives. Really, as we are cleaning our homes, we want to be cleaning our hearts to make space for Hashem to live. Because Hashem, in creating the world, you know, there's this mystical Kabbalistic concept of tzimtzum, of God's contraction, right? If God is everything and everywhere, if there's nothing else besides God, how could the world exist? It doesn't make sense. So the Kabbalists have a concept they call contraction, or tzimtzum, which is where God got himself out of the way. He actually contracted himself and made space inside himself for the world to exist. We are supposed to emulate God. So just as God made space inside himself for us, we are supposed to make space inside ourselves for him.
The world is inside God?
Yes, the world is inside God.
So he made room inside.
Inside of him, right. That's why we call God, one of the names for God is the place, Hamakom. And we use that word when we comfort a mourner, right? Hamakom yinachem etchem, right? Hamakom. So it means the space, the place, right? So God is the place. There's nothing else besides God. But if we're here, there is something else besides God because we're not God, right? So that must mean that God contracted God's self, whatever this means, and I'm not equipped to explain whatever that means. Somehow God contracted God's self physically for the physical world to exist, but also contracted his will in order for free will to exist. He pulled back his desire so that we could act against his will if we so choose. And in order for us to be able to do that, he had to get his will out of the way for our will to be able to exist. So we're supposed to emulate God, which means actually getting our ego, our will, our self out of the way, in a way, for God to be able to live inside of us. So that's part of the work that we're doing. We do it through the physical, but that's part of the spiritual results that we're hoping we accomplish through the physical cleaning. So, and it's done physically. It's not done. This is not Elul. This is Nisan, right? Or Erev Pesach. We're still in Adar, but it's a different work than the work of Elul. The work of Elul before Rosh Hashanah is all spiritual work. You're making lists of who you are and what you think and all that stuff, and that's the work of Elul. That is not the work right now. The work right now is to be very physical. Do the cleaning, sweep and scrub and look and check, and through that come to a higher spiritual place. So you just have to have in mind that as you're sweeping out the chametz from your house, you're sweeping it out from your heart. But it doesn't mean you have to make lists of how you get it out, right? The work is the physical work. But that is what you're trying to do, is sweep it out of your heart too.
And I think Judaism is exemplary from physical mitzvot and a lot of details, taking us to ascend rather than just talk about being spiritual,
right,
a good person.
Right.
By the mitzvot and all the commandments.
Right.
So you ascend naturally.
Right, you ascend by doing. That's what we understand, is that you have to do to become. So, and that's why the verse says, build for me a sanctuary and I will live among you. Right? It should say, build for me a sanctuary and I'll live in it. It doesn't. It says, build for me a sanctuary and I'll live among you. Meaning, engage in the physical and do all the physical stuff you're supposed to do, and that will create the space inside you for me to live there. Right? It's not about the building. It's about what you create in you as you do the physical. So, with that in mind, let's get physical. we're going to do a physical review this time. So, kosher for Pesach, what does that mean? We want to make our homes and lives kosher for Pesach. So, in our areas that we have to focus on, the physical areas in our domain, our home, car, office, right, and anything else that you have. If you have a country home, if you have an RV, if you have whatever it is, all your spots have to be kosher l'Pesach, right? So what does that mean? No chametz should be seen. No edible chametz should be owned. You gather all the chametz that you're going to sell, if that's your custom to sell, and it is the Ashkenazic custom to sell. Some Sephardim don't sell. They get rid of everything. They still sell just in case they made a mistake, but it is our general custom to sell. So, but you'd want to gather all your chametz that you're going to sell into one place.
And outside,
and the rest.
Like outside in the fridge outside.
It could be in the fridge outside. It could be in a cabinet inside, taped shut.
Right, with garbage bags.
Yeah, or just a piece of tape. It doesn't have to be. Mm-hmm. We are permitted for this holiday to go crazy. The rest of the holidays we're not supposed to. The rest of everything in Judaism, we are not supposed to go crazy. But we are permitted for Passover to go nuts. So there's a classic story of the wife of Rev Diskin of Jerusalem. He comes home in the weeks before Passover and sees his wife pouring boiling water over the doorknob going into the kitchen. And he says, "What are you doing? There is no need to pour boiling water over the doorknob, the handle, right, going into the kitchen. The Shulchan Aruch does not require that. The Code of Jewish Law does not require that anywhere." And her response, which is the response of many Jewish housewives, was, "You and your Shulchan Aruch. If we followed that, we'd all be eating chametz on Pesach," right? So, so that is the Jewish wife thinks that halacha is not strong enough when it comes to Pesach, and we do go nuts for Pesach.
Yeah, in Israel, a cousin of ours takes toothbrushes in the fridge to clean.
Yeah.
Like.
Right.
Think
of it. So we do want to be careful to not go absolutely nuts. Anybody who has OCD, take extra medicine before you start cleaning. But for those of us who don't, we shouldn't get OCD over this, but we do have to clean carefully. So let's see.
Can I ask you about logistics?
Yes, you can. We're going to do logistics for sure. Yeah.
Okay, so I've got vinyl coverings that I put on the tables and the counters. Mm-hmm. But then I don't know, how do I wash them? I don't understand it, because I've got to put them down to wash them, which means I'm putting them down on something. And
you're washing them when?
Well, I'm going to take them down off the shelf.
Uh-huh. So your counter should be spotless before you put them on it. Your counter should be clean.
Okay, so all I've got to do is clean it, and then I can put this other stuff on top.
Really clean.
Clean it.
Okay. Really clean.
And then when I pour boiling water into the sink.
Okay, we're going to get there. Okay, let's get back to our list here, because we are totally going to get there.
I have a refrigerator question, too.
No, we're going to get there. You can ask whatever question you want, but let's just go in order a little bit. Do I have that here? Okay, so let's just talk for a minute, just to get, because it may answer some of your questions, right? So in the rest of the house, you just want to get the chametz out. And vacuuming is good enough. You do not have to take a toothbrush to your window screens or your bathroom tiles or anything in the rest of your house. You just have to wipe it clean and vacuum. That's it. That's it. You don't even have to clean your bathroom if you don't want to. I mean, you could take the chametz out of your medicine cabinet. That's it. if there isn't. But you should check your medicine cabinet and under your sink for chametz, and check your shampoos and cream rinses for beer. There used to, it's not such a fad these days, but there used to be beer shampoos that was all the thing, gave, you know, volume and shine. Beer shampoo. So on Pesach, you're not allowed to get any benefit from chametz. Not just not eat it. No benefit at all whatsoever. So you can't have it in shampoo, and you can't feed it to your animals, and you can't ask a cleaning lady to use a chametz-based solution anywhere. Right, there's no benefit at all whatsoever from chametz on Pesach. So that's in the entire house. In the kitchen, however, we are careful with crumbs and specks. And any crumb and speck that may get into the food. So let's just talk about what to be careful about. So chametz is leavened stuff. So a noodle, right, is chametz, right? You might have a noodle under your burner or something like that. That's an actual piece of chametz, right? Then there's what's called sa'or. Sa'or is a sourdough, a mixture that includes any one of the five grains that can be used to ferment other doughs. That's gooky stuff, right? So it doesn't necessarily mean your sourdough starter that you bought from San Francisco. That, of course, you have to sell. But there might be sa'or, not a noodle under your stove, but gooky stuff from your mushroom barley soup that boiled over, and now there's some gunk under there. That might, if you activate it, be able to cause something to rise. It's possible, right? It could be dry and still work if it gets wet again. So that would be called sa'or.
Mushroom barley?
I'm just giving an example because it has barley in it. Like how you might have sa'or in your kitchen if you're not actually cultivating a sourdough starter, right? Or, for instance, let's say you do have a son who loves to cultivate sourdough starters, and his starters are extremely active, just speaking from experience. And occasionally when he feeds it, the entire tub of sourdough starter bubbles over down your windowsill onto the tile behind your sink, right? You have to be really careful cleaning that tile before Pesach.
Which tile?
The tile that your sourdough starter bubbled over and got all into the grout. I'm just giving examples, right, where you might have sa'or in your kitchen.
Give me another example of what is sa'or.
Sa'or is gunky stuff that could cause, that has...
potential to rise.
That has the potential to cause something to rise, or did rise.
But like, what does your son do, for example?
Sourdough starter. Do you know what sourdough starter is? Uh-huh, okay. So,
Maybe gluten-free house.
Right. So in order to make sourdough, there's two principal ways to make bread rise, a yeast bread.
Yes.
One is with active yeast cultures.
Right, that I know.
Or active yeast that you buy in the store, you know, Red Diamond, whatever
yeast,
it is, yeah. Yeast that you buy and you stick in, right? You could buy it freeze-dried or you could buy it fresh, right? That's yeast. Or you can ferment your dough. That's called sourdough.
Okay.
And it's using natural yeast cultures that are in the air and capturing them. It's a whole process. And then you have to feed that culture to keep it alive so that you can make bread when you want to make bread. And that was used in early America as they trekked out west. And, you know, the gold diggers, they had sourdough cultures because they couldn't go somewhere and just buy yeast when they wanted it. So they produced their own yeast or captured their own yeast, and then they fed it to keep it alive. So if you're doing that, it produces a very different bread with a sour flavor. Some people love it. Some people hate it. So you have to, if you like that kind, and depending on how sour you like it, you can let it ferment. But for sure, that's over 18 minutes. But this is days-long process to make this work. So, but it can make a mess sometimes if it's very active and it bubbles over, and then, you know, it can stick everywhere. And if you didn't clean it perfectly, then you have sa'or in your kitchen, right? So those are the two things you want to get rid of. Sa'or could be any kind of gunky stuff. You might not recognize it like you recognize that noodle or little piece of toast in the bottom of your toaster. It might be stuff that's boiled under the plate of your stovetop. And there's stuff there from soups that boiled over and things. That would be called sa'or, right? So that you need to get rid of also. And then finally, there's the category. So those are two categories. And then there's the category of garbage, which is not something that we'd eat. It's too old, too small, too yucky, too hard to get. You don't have to worry about that. So, for instance, in your refrigerator, right? You can't get all those cracks and crevices, right? But nobody's eating that. However, it might be sa'or. Let's say you had a huge mess. You spilled your sourdough starter in your fridge, and it went into all the cracks of everything, right? So you do have to clean that carefully, but you can also kill it and make it inedible.
Like so, Clorox?
Yeah, so you clean it as best you can, and then you spritz it with 409 or Clorox or whatever it is, and you're done. So you get up the gunk that you can. You don't have to go with a toothpick and get every single speck. You can use Clorox or 409 and make it inedible. Yes.
So on the refrigerator, there's something towards the bottom, like a glass,
right.
glass shelf. It is stuck. We cannot get it out.
Pour hot water over it, and it'll come. It's stuck because it's probably melted sticky stuff underneath.
Okay. And if it doesn't, can we just say, well, whatever cracks
you can.
There are, they're going to...
It's not...
We're not
you can't reach it.
Anyway.
Yeah, you can't reach it. Okay. But you'll probably be able to get it. Take out the drawers. I mean, after you empty the whole fridge to clean it, take out the drawers. Just pour some, you know, and you don't want to crack the glass, but pour some hot water around the edges and let it seep under a little bit, and then do a second coating, and it'll probably loosen up.
Okay.
Right. But if you can't, you can't.
Hot water, too.
Yeah.
Does that be in a special Passover pot?
No. So your refrigerator, I'm going to say something very unorthodox, but this is according to Halacha. You don't have to cover all the surfaces. In fact, you don't have to cover any. You just have to make it clean. Now, you may be concerned, as I am, that people think you're a guy if you don't cover everything.
Mm-hmm.
So
cover with what, aluminum?
So I do cover my shelves
with
just for that.
Aluminum?
But halakhically, you do not have to. Not have to cover your fridge.
Aluminum?
With aluminum foil or contact paper or plastic shelf coverings. Right? I just don't want somebody looking in my fridge thinking I didn't get ready for Pesach because it just looks clean but it's empty. So I do cover. But you don't have to.
I never saw.
You do not have to. So let's say I would use paper towels and one would move, I wouldn't freak out. You know, like, fine. You do not have to. You just have to clean it. Because you're not putting anything hot. You're not cooking anything on it. Nothing is... So the principle is heat makes a material absorb chametz or treif or kosher. And heat then also releases it. So since you're not cooking, you're not with the surface of the refrigerator, it's not absorbing or releasing chametz onto anything. So you don't have to worry about the fridge. Countertops, you do put hot stuff on or things fall on it. So it does absorb and could release. Same thing as tabletops. Even if you know for sure, that's a place where we are super careful. We want a waterproof barrier between our eating surface from year-round and our Pesach eating surface. So,
what do you mean?
Plastic. I mean plastic. So let's say you're the type that hates a plastic covering on top of your tablecloth, then you put it under your tablecloth. But you need plastic between your year-round table and your Passover food.
So, not just the tablecloth.
No.
I got a nice thick plastic at Walmart.
Yeah.
It doesn't cost much.
Right, it doesn't. You can do the plastic pads, table pads, you know, that have like the foam backing, or you can use a vinyl tablecloth that's nice and drapey and just put your nice tablecloth on top of that if you want.
Even though it's the one from, probably we should have a special one for Pesach.
It's
not
nice.
The one
yeah.
that we use with bread and challah.
Yeah, well, you can just wash it and it's kosher. However, if you have a fancy tablecloth that you take to the cleaners and they starch, that you have to cover with plastic. Because who knows what that starch is.
Yeah, I do it by hand. I do it at home.
I'm saying what starch is in it, though. Are you spraying it with a starch?
Because in the machine.
Oh, yeah, that's washing it. No, so washing it's one thing. But if you have a linen cloth that you're ironing with starch, you don't want that starch, which is a food starch, near your Pesach stuff. So it might be cornstarch, it's kidney oat, who knows what's in there. But in general, we're careful then to cover that tablecloth with a plastic.
Or not iron.
Or not have it, not starch it, right?
Not
but
iron.
The linen cloth doesn't look as nice without the starch. So,
I've never thought of it.
Yeah.
Is the starch for the collar or something?
Yeah, you starch a shirt to make it look really nice, but you starch tablecloths too.
Yeah.
The fancy tablecloths, not the kind that you buy at Bed Bath & Beyond and throw in the washing machine.
I never realized.
No, the $100, $200, $300 kind, you know, from...
Like a real damn
yeah. paper. Those you send to the cleaners and get back on a hanger. And,
and they're chametz.
And they're not chametz, but we're careful. They might be chametz. Who knows what's in the starch? I don't know. So we're careful. I wouldn't call it chametz. It's probably not. It's probably potato starch or corn starch, but still not starch that we want on our Passover food. Okay. So, all right. So that's covering our tables. Okay. Garbage we talked about. Okay, so cabinets. What do you have to do for cabinets?
What do you mean by garbage?
Garbage?
We just clean with Clorox.
So I'm saying garbage is a category of stuff that we don't have to worry about removing from our house unless it adds up to a kazayit. So let's say underneath your stovetop, why are we lifting that to clean? It is garbage, right? That's what's under there. Nobody's eating that. Maybe if you let your dog up there, he might enjoy licking it. It's possible. And that is one of the rules. If a dog will eat it, it's still food. Right? So your dog might enjoy it if you'd open it. But whatever, you still have to, if the gunk that's underneath your stovetop will add up to a hunk of muck, you have to get rid of it. Because you don't know what's in there. And that, even though it is garbage, it might add up into a chametz bunch of guck that we are not allowed to keep.
When you say stovetop, what kind of stove are you talking about?
I'm talking about any stove.
The old ones.
All
the
stoves.
The one that I have, the old ones.
Not a glass top, because nothing can get underneath that. Glass tops are a problem to kosher for Pesach, by the way.
I've got utensils.
They cannot be kosher?
They're a big problem. I don't know. You'll have to ask. I don't know the rules with glass stove tops.
I have the old kind with the things you have to take out.
Burners.
I would think it's easier to clean.
Right. It's easy to clean. I don't know if you can make it kosher.
Really?
I asked about
the modern
this.
Ones.
You can't use the. You can't, have to make sure the pot doesn't touch the part that it doesn't get very
well,
hot.
Well, no. I have a glass, but then on top of it, it's a gas stove.
Oh.
So the burners are metal.
No. That's
it's
not.
Just easy.
Yeah,
to
no, no problem. No, I'm talking about flat glass
okay.
tops.
No.
The flat glass tops are a halachic problem for Passover. So everybody who has a flat glass top stove, ask their own rabbi.
Okay.
But whoever has electric or gas,
right.
we can talk
yeah.
here.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
I've got a flat top, and I went out and I bought all these electrical appliances, crock pots and electrical skillets and things like that.
Interesting for Passover, because you can't do the glass top. Right. Yeah,
The glass top is, I don't have one, but glass top is bad, but...
For
gas
Passover.
And electric is okay.
Yeah, gas and electric is okay. I mean, you have to kosher it. So let's talk. Okay, so cabinets. So we're just going to go through a whole kitchen. This is how you. It's called. The language that we use in English for making our kitchen kosher is called flipping our kitchen. That's just how we Jews talk. So people ask. You should not get into this conversation because you shouldn't compare yourself with other people. But people say, when are you flipping? Have you flipped yet? Oh, I'm flipping tomorrow. I'm flipping next week. I'm flipping the day before. I'm flipping the week before. I flip 2 weeks before because I wait. Flipping is the language that's used. Okay.
Kind of question.
Just so you know. Yeah.
Okay. So I've got my Passover kitchen, which is the laundry room.
Nice. Okay.
And since it's the laundry room, there's a little bit of chametz wanders in during the
For
year
sure.
when I'm washing towels and
right.
things. But I've got all the Passover things are in cabinets. So I just assumed this year that I didn't have to clean those out.
The cabinets you do not have to clean out. No. You do
last year somebody put cookies in
you don't. You don't. You do not have to clean those cabinets.
Okay.
No. I personally have a stove and sink in the laundry room too, and I use that for my chametz kitchen while I'm flipping my other kitchen. So that's where I make the noodles downstairs while upstairs is under... in process, you know, because the process takes a while. So and that way I can have my whole big kitchen for Pesach. But everybody does how they want. I'm just saying, I like to use my little kitchen for my chametz kitchen and make my big kitchen Pesach. Because anyway, you have to make a big kitchen. You have to make your upstairs kitchen, if you're having guests, guestable. So some people have a Pesach kitchen so that they can start cooking early before they flipped their regular kitchen.
Mm.
I personally would rather cook my chametz downstairs and flip a little earlier so I can cook upstairs.
Oh, we have the kitchen down in the laundry room, and then the family room is the dining room, so we just go underground for Passover.
Uh-huh. Yeah, cute. Yeah, wow. So you could do that. Yeah. Okay, so cabinets, what do you have to do? Clean, clear, and line. Again, you don't have to line your cabinet, but that's basically what we usually do. So clean. You for sure have to clear it out and clean it. And then what you want to do is consolidate your year-round dishes so that you can empty up spaces that will be used for your Passover dishes. So you just like stack everything tight. So you have space for your Pesach stuff. Clean and line your drawers and your shelves and your cabinets for Pesach items. Check your other cabinet areas. You don't even have to necessarily clean them, especially what you're going to, like, if you have a place where you're stuffing all your chametz, you don't have to take it out first and clean. You just stuff it all in there and tape it shut. If you're the clean type, you could take it all out first and clean because you want to do that. But that's spring cleaning. That's not Pesach cleaning, just so you know.
You mean the chametz? Which one you don't have to clean where the chametz goes?
Your chametz cabinet. Yeah, you don't have to take it out and clean the corners of your chametz cabinet before you put your chametz in it that you're going to sell.
So the same would transfer. So, for example, like I don't empty my drawers and my cabinets. Mm-hmm. Generally, I bring in those big commercial, you know, the metal shelves like mm-hmm. for the garage. I just park them. And
great, so you can just tape them shut. That.
So I tape off the other stuff and don't worry about
it. Right, you do not have to worry about tape it shut. However, I
go through it.
Yeah, you should just look. You should just look. Sometimes little chunks of things, right. You know, you take something out of the dishwasher that you thought was clean, but there's really a noodle on it.
So that essentially becomes the chametz cabinet.
Right, so you want, okay, so that's fine. But you do just want to check and make sure there's no hunks of chametz in your drawers. So you just give a quick check.
Yeah, I do that.
For example, when you have the forks and knives.
Right, there's little pieces, right? You want to get the little pieces.
Yeah,
right.
I reuse my shelf liners. Sometimes my Pesach ones.
Right, just save them from Pesach to Pesach. Yeah, sure. Okay. Yeah, I do that too. And then you should think about your door handles, though, your drawer handles. So I have a baking area, right? So I have pretty little handles, but there's always little bits of flour there. So I personally don't think I'm going nuts when I unscrew the handles and take a toothbrush to the handle because there is flour in it and flour stuck in between it and the drawer. So I do unscrew it and I clean that that area where there's flour stuck in it from the baking area. Because you never know if you're going to open that drawer. Like you might get a little. For Passover, for year-round, our rule is non-kosher is nullified one part in 60th. So let's say you're making chicken soup and hot chocolate and you just move a spoon over the wrong pot and some drips in either direction. It's a few drips of milk in your chicken soup does not make it treif.
Because it's 1/60th.
It's because less than 1/60th in volume. However, for Passover, no amount is nullified on Passover itself. And before Passover, it's 1 in 1,000. So that's why we buy milk and eggs and juice, all that stuff we buy before Passover, enough for the whole holiday if we can. Because then you can buy regular milk that doesn't say kosher l'Pesach, and you can buy regular orange juice, regular not from concentrate orange juice, that's only orange juice. You can buy that before Passover, and regular eggs you buy before Passover, because if there's anything in it, it's nullified, it's less than 1 in 1,000. But on Passover, if you run out, you have to buy kosher for Passover only.
What else can you buy before? Like, for example, instant coffee. Does it really have to be kosher for Passover?
The jelly also.
This jelly, for sure, you do have to, because that it has corn mm-hmm. sweeteners in it. But instant coffee, there are lists. Butter, you could buy before. Mm-hmm. But anything that has anything in it, like cottage cheese, could have emulsifiers that are kidney oat. So we don't buy that. So kidney oat is its whole own thing. I'll talk about that in a second. But there are lists of things that you can buy. But you have to get like the OU lists and the mm-hmm. OK lists. And the OU just came out this year and said that instant coffee, which in the past they have permitted to buy before Passover, they are no longer permitting with a special Passover certification. But ground coffee, ground plain coffee, you can buy mm-hmm. without Passover certification before Passover.
Mm-hmm. So would that be like the Starbucks Via, the micro grind?
That's a good question. I don't know. Buying a bag of beans and grinding it, you can do that before Passover.
In a special for Passover grinder?
No, in a regular coffee grinder, because you're just grinding beans.
It's just always coffee.
It's always coffee, yeah. So you can do that in the supermarket. This is where you're 1 in 1,000 comes in, right? Because if, for whatever reasons, there was a piece of wheat in one of the huge things of coffee that came in and nobody caught it, and it did go through the grinder, and now you're grinding your coffee, it's still less than 1 in 1,000 before Passover.
Well, if you use the machine that uses the, how do you call them, the capsules, you know, with coffee.
Yeah, that's different. I'm not talking about that.
What about those?
No.
They're not acceptable? Mm-mm.
No, that would have to have special kosher for Passover certification, and you'd need a Passover machine that only ever made the kosher for Passover little thingies.
Okay. So then we'll have to switch to instant coffee. And
yeah, or buy a percolator for $40 at Walmart. Right. I love perked coffee now.
The coffee grinder doesn't have to be washed out, boiled, nothing?
No. It's just coffee. Let's just go to Kitniot for a minute. Mm-hmm. We Ashkenazim have a special chumrah, a special stricture. It does not apply to Sephardim, although some Sephardim have taken this on. So, but in general, the entire Ashkenazic world does not eat Kitniot on Pesach. Kitniot is it's a specific list, but basically it's anything that, when ground, could look like a chametz flour or might be mixed with a chametz flour.
So coffee is one of those things.
So coffee, it turns out, is not one of those things. Yes, Moroccans hold that. So in our list, we have beans. Beans and legumes are considered kitniot. So even string beans, or even corn on the cob, corn is part of it. We don't eat that on Passover, even fresh.
Right. Even string beans?
Even string beans.
So what can you eat? What vegetables?
Well, hang on. That's a different question. Let's finish with this concept.
Potatoes.
Right? Yeah. So,
cauliflower.
Right. So we don't have beans and legumes. So the Moroccans hold that coffee beans and cocoa beans are beans, so they don't have chocolate or coffee on Pesach either. I know. Thank God we're not Moroccan, right? So, and anybody who is Moroccan, I'm sorry. I mean, I'm glad you're Moroccan, but I'm sorry you can't have chocolate on Pesach. So, right. I know. How do you get through the whole thing? It makes it really hard. So, for the rest of us, we are careful. Now, inside the Kitniot camp, there are two camps, and we have forgotten about the second camp in this country. But you may, if you can, want to check out what your family's actual custom is, just so you know, in case you go to Israel.
I am, actually.
Well, you have to know your custom. So here's two customs within Kitniot. Okay. One is no Kitniot at all whatsoever, and another is no Kitniot foods, but Kitniot derivatives are permitted.
Like peanut butter?
So some people would say peanut butter, some people wouldn't. But like corn oil. That's not corn. It comes from corn. So there are Ashkenazim who would have high fructose corn syrup, who would have corn oil, who would have, you know, margarine with corn in it, who would have soy things. Right. So in this country, they don't sell anything that's kosher l'Pesach with that in it. But in Israel, they do. And it will say on the container, kosher l'Pesach le'ochle kitniot. This is kosher for Passover for those who eat kitniot. Or, kosher l'Pesach le'ochle me'ein kitniot.
How do you write me'ein?
Me'ein. Like me'ein olam haba. Right? Or me'ein shalosh. Me'ein. I think it's a alf, but I'm not positive. I should look it up. Me'ein. It's called me'ein. So me'ein kitniot. I'm not from the spellers.
I've never seen that.
Yeah, me'ein kitniot. So that you won't see it in this country, most likely.
No, but in Israel.
So that's why you have to find out your family's custom. Do you eat me'ein kitniot or not?
We don't eat kitniot.
When you say your, you actually mean our husbands, right?
I mean whatever custom you're going by, whether it's your husband's and you're digging back into his family traditions to find out if you're a Baal Tshuva, or if you're attached to a rabbi, then you can ask him, what's our custom? So, for instance, in the Southeast, those people who are attached to Rabbi Meir, who are Balei Tshuva, are very lucky Balei Tshuva, because Rabbi Meir only waits 3 hours between meat and milk. And so the Southeast is happy, happy, happy 3-hour waiters, where the rest of the country's Balei Tshuvas are stuck with 6.
I had to go before based in.
Right.
Because he comes from Germany, like me.
That's correct.
Right. So he told me also that, why do I do 6? I could do 3, but then I heard I have to do my husband's custom.
Yeah, you do.
So my
unless
husband,
you go home.
Yeah, but if you switch, you've got to go before a base stem.
Right, so you have to ask your rabbi about that. But it turns out that women who married men who have different customs than them can keep, in general, and ask your own rabbi, can keep their family's customs if they go to their family. So a Sephardi woman who eats kitniot, who marries an Ashkenazi man, cannot cook kitniot in her house or eat it. But if she goes to her mother's house on Pesach, she can have rice when her mother serves it, but her husband can't. But he can eat off her dishes. So it gets tricky like that. So ask your own shaylos about that. Okay.
We live in Israel, so my mom thinks I'm crazy now that I don't eat kitniot. Everyone was eating everything.
Right. Is your family Ashkenazic? Yeah, yeah. Come from Germany, right. So you have to worry about the kitniot, right.
But
so,
I don't. But they think I'm crazy.
That you don't?
Because they said, don't you remember in Israel they sold everything? They sold corn, they sold peas.
Right. But right. They, so, but not everybody can eat that. But more than half of Israel is Sephardic. So they are going to sell that stuff.
Last year after Passover was over, I looked at the cups I had bought, the disposables, and it said made out of corn.
Right.
So I asked the rabbi, they said it's Don't worry about it.
Oh, yeah.
Right. It's not, it does not trafe things up.
No.
No?
No. It is not.
You have to look at it.
You have to not eat it. So I'll tell you one thing you have to check. Your paper towels, especially let's say you use paper towels to... Any paper towel, the you know how it has a little glue when you start the roll and it's glued onto the end? It's with starch. So the first three and the last three sheets on the roll we don't use with food. So let's say you use paper towels to put on top of your chicken soup to take the fat off the top. Then you wouldn't use the first three or the last three sheets to do that.
That works?
Yeah, it works great. Yeah. You just rest the paper towel on top, it soaks up the fat, and you just take it off and throw it away. You might have to do a few, you know, but it does work. It's a good trick. Okay, let's go here. So the day before flipping, you want to self-clean your oven and leave your racks in. Even though your oven tells you not to leave your racks in, you do have to warp them and ruin them if you want to use them for Pesach by leaving them in the oven when you self-clean, or then you can't use them for Pesach.
Anybody
who really cares can buy separate racks for Pesach, and then they don't have to ruin their racks ever. You scrub your sinks and your drain openings. The drain openings, too, you want to get, like, if you have a, what's that called, a garbage disposal, and it has that black flap, you want to get your hand under there and clean the gunk, because that could be so, or clean some of the gunk that's under there. It's disgusting, let me tell you, but it needs to be done once a year.
So I just have a general question, because I think this year I'm going to be really screwed, because I have a business trip right before.
You start that. Now, start now.
Yeah, well, Leo will have to do most of it, so I'm just going to give it to him. But what is the latest, really, like in general, when you stop cleaning and start cooking? The latest, like, you know, physically, because I'm not doing Seder, a big Seder, it's just going to be us and like a very small family, like my mom, my brother, and that second Seder we're going out.
Good. That's good. Okay. So, but you want to make it kosher for Passover.
For sure. So, Monday night, so searching for hametz is Sunday night, right?
Right.
So Shabbat we can't clean anything. Can we clean on Sunday morning? Like
you can, but it's way too risky. No. You basically want to have you want your kitchen kosher for Passover before Shabbos. So if you're coming back Friday,
you will have to do it.
Yeah. So that's what this sheet is about, the 4-week countdown. Mm-hmm. Right? So you start now with your family meeting, you look over your calendar and you put dates, you put things on dates, you set appointments for what your house needs. Like some people like to have their carpets.
No, I already started buying.
You do that stuff. Bless you. You empty your cabinet, you buy your non-perishables. You make your menu so that you know what to get. You assess your Pesach kitchen inventory. Do you have enough cutting boards? I'm on the second sheet. The Pesach 4-week countdown. There's two separate sheets for you to get. Right?
This one. Right.
Yeah. There. Oh. Yeah, separate things. You invite your guests. So this is what you're doing this week. You think about sleepover guests, if you're having them, where will they sleep? Do you have enough linen, beds, pillows, towels, all that stuff? Plan to fill in if necessary. You create your meal plans, menus, and lists of helpers, so you're not doing it all by yourself. You order your matzah, your wine, your meat, and your fish this week to make sure you get it, right? And you plan your haircuts and your shaytel appointments, so you have that on the calendar.
Oui.
Yeah, right. So then 3 weeks before. You don't have to worry about nobody here has toddlers, but if you have toddlers, you might want to start giving them Pesach snacks or keeping them eating in the kitchen starting from three or 2 weeks before. For everyone, you begin making sure the food's eaten in the kitchen only, right? So this is when you stop. 3 weeks before is when you stop eating in front of your desk, you stop bringing snacks to your room, you stop walking around the house with food, so that when you vacuum, you're done.
All year, I don't know.
Good, so if that's it,
well,
that's
I never do it just, you know, for that reason, so that I don't have to worry about the other places. I didn't even eat in my car.
Great. And you are set. The car you can clean this week. A quick vacuum and you're done. Right, cars, I love cleaning the car for Pesach because you know when you're done. You know, unlike the house where you could just keep going and going, you can't keep going with your car. Right. When you're done, you're done. It's so feeling to know your car is done.
But my carpool eats every time I have.
All right, so then you have so then you're not done. But
supermarket.
When you clean it, right? So you could say our car's face addict. There's no more eating now. Or apples only, fruit only, whatever.
That's true.
Let's see. So also, if you're buying gifts, you want to start thinking about gifts 3 weeks before your Afikoman presents or your Yontif or holiday gifts, whatever you're getting for people if you are. If you have pets, you want to check your pet food and make sure it's kosher l'Pesach. Pets cannot eat chametz. They can eat kitniot. You have to read the ingredients and make sure that there's no wheat, rye, oats, barley, or spelt in your pet food. If there is, you have to find pet food that doesn't have it. And you might, by 3 weeks before, want to start mixing it so your pets don't get an upset stomach. But for Pesach, they can only have the Pesedik pet food.
Where do you get that?
You just have to read ingredients.
Yeah, my
Costco will have it.
Died a year ago, so it's not.
Oh, I got a Scroll K, and
they'll say,
or some other Star K maybe, and they've got lists.
Great.
We also used to get food delivered from a place called the Pet Pantry, and they sold a canned food out of Chicago.
Canned foods are easier to find than the dry foods. But if you use a dry food, you just have to look. It's just about reading, or you can look online. Every year it's different.
I thought that last year, but I never knew.
Right. And the cat is not happy about it.
Right. They will complain. Last year my pets did not touch our Pesedik dry food. They thought it was disgusting. They starved the whole week. They only had leftovers.
They
wouldn't eat it. I made them food. I gave them all the leftovers. They managed, but it was so funny. They were so snobby about it. They did not touch it. Not at all. And I tried mixing it after that, and they ate the new food and left all the Pesedik food in the bowl. They ate around every single little thing.
So it's probably very nice.
Yeah, they hated it. A week or two before Pesach, clean your fridge and freezer, designating one chametz area. So you could do that pretty soon, actually. You could clean out your fridge and leave a shelf for chametz, and the rest is clean. So you just line a shelf, put your chametz on that shelf, then when you're done eating chametz, you just take the liner off, and your fridge is clean for Pesach. So you could do that. Mm-hmm. You can do that in advance. Clean your cars, finalize your menu plans, and your meal plans and menus, begin cleaning the kitchen. So you can start that even before you go. You can do things like clean under your stovetop before you go on your trip, or clean the seam between the counter and your stove, you know, where all those little things drop. It's really dirty there. You can do that now, and then you can just run through it again right before when you come back Friday morning. You can have most of it done. Your ovens can be self-cleaned, your counters can be cleaned, the cracks and crevices. You can do almost everything, and then you just do a wipe down again. But if you do the heavy cleaning now, then it'll just be a few hours to do everything.
The timers that I use, do they have to be only for Passover?
No, just spritz it, because you just don't want to transfer any schmutz that's on the timer into the food. So you just want it clean, that's fine. The week before Pesach, you shop for your perishables, Costco, kosher deli, supermarket, etc. Fill in your non-perishables. That's the week before Pesach is when you do your haircuts and shetel styling, your final clothes shopping, right? Because earlier clothes shopping. If you have kids that you're dressing, you know, or whatever, you have to think about what are they wearing and make sure that their shoes match.
So much.
Right. So you have to think about, do they have suits that fit? Do they have white shirts? Are there enough? You're not supposed to do laundry for over 9-year-olds if you can avoid it at all.
The whole
Pesach.
No laundry?
No laundry for over 9-year-olds.
What?
Yeah.
Clothes for 9 years old and older you don't wash?
Correct.
The whole week?
The whole week. Because it's Yontif. The whole week is Yontif. We'll talk about this another time. But the whole week is Yontif. You're just allowed to do some stuff on the days that aren't actually Yontif. But Chol HaMoed is Moed. It's a holiday. There's no laundry allowed. There's no nail cutting allowed. There's no plant watering allowed. You're not supposed to do malacha. You're not supposed to write.
So the plants will die.
Right. So you, if they will die, you ask your own. You can water them if they'll die, but you're not supposed to. You're not supposed to like prune or take care of them. Yeah. So you can water them.
But you cook on intermediate days. Yeah. Are okay. Yeah.
Pardon?
Cooking.
Yes, you can cook.
But not write.
I'll tell you how much you're not supposed to write. I'll tell you how much you're not supposed to write. Let's say you have to write for whatever reason. I don't know. You're writing a note to somebody that has to be written, or a transfer of sale. Something
computer,
something you have
email,
to write.
Same thing.
So you're really not supposed to if you can avoid it. So much so that if you do have to write something, and you're the type that usually writes Beit Samach Dalet at the top of your paper, or BH, Baruch Hashem, right, at the top.
Which one is better?
You shouldn't write it. Even if you have to write something you have to write, don't write those extra letters.
Which one do you like more, Basad? Or?
I like Basad better. B'siyata Dishmaya, with the help of heaven, rather than Baruch Hashem, because I want like with the help of heaven invested in my paper that I'm about to write. So I write B'siyata Dishmaya.
You don't like Baruch Hashem as much?
I personally like B'siyata Dishmaya, so I write Beit Samach
Dalet. But I don't understand what you're saying. Is that Yiddish?
It's Aramaic.
Aramaic, what can you say?
Beit Samach Dalet.
Right.
B'siyata, with an aleph at the end. Dishmaya. Also with an aleph at the end. Yeah.
The help of Shema.
Right.
With the help
of Shema.
Versus blessing me.
Right. Versus blessed in Sashem. Right.
And some do a different one. What did I get today?
It's usually BH or BSD is what people write.
Something else. Yeah. With an I don't know.
Oh, Amir Tzeh Hashem, but I don't see that on top of paper.
So because then you have a help with the help of Hashem rather than blessing me.
Right.
And we're not supposed to use a computer during a homework?
So you'll have to ask your own rabbi, but as a substitute for one, you're really supposed to minimize it. You're not supposed to be doing malacha. You are allowed to take trips. You can drive, which means you're using fire. You can do that.
Can I call?
You can do the recreational stuff. If you can,
telephone is okay.
Telephone's fine. I think computer's fine too. But really, you have to. This is where, in a way, we can be conservative about it with the capital C instead of the small C, right? That you're supposed to minimize it. You're supposed to make it as yentifdik as possible. There are certain things you're not permitted to do. Right, so you can't get a haircut and you can't cut your nails. If you cut your nails before and you've got a hangnail, you're allowed to cut that, or it grew a lot, you're allowed to cut it. The idea is you're supposed to prepare for Yontif before Yontif, not wait until Chol HaMoed to get those things done.
Right, and
so the whole thing, you're supposed to wear nicer clothes, nicer jewelry, eat nicer foods, you know,
Hidur.
You're supposed to make it nice. Let's say you run out of underwear, right, and you need to do laundry. If you have the money, you should buy a new pack. Better than doing laundry. But you can do that today for $6.50. But let's say your son is 14 and he's a slob, right? And he needs 2 white shirts every day because he just, every time he eats, right? You're not going to buy 10 white shirts. So for that one kid, you'll wash in the middle of during Chol HaMoed 1 load of only his shirts. You don't throw in extra because you're not supposed to be working. So you don't throw in the extra things. Or, for instance, I'll tell you, I personally do 1 load of hand towels because who needs 50 hand towels? But we use all those. So I have probably 30. I don't need to buy 20 more. But I do need clean ones for the second days of Yontif. So I'll just wash that. No bath towels. I have enough bath towels for everybody. But just what's used in the kitchen, and they're all dirty by now. So I just wash 1 load of something that we need. That there's no point in owning that many hand towels. Playing the piano is... Yeah, I think you can't. Chag, of course not. But Chol HaMoed, you can. Some people are careful about Sfira. A lot of people say Sfira doesn't start. It does, of course, we're counting during Chol HaMoed Pesach, but a lot of people say that even though you're using those days in the count, you don't have to mourn at all during those days. So
you
can't
have to what?
Mourn. Sfira is days of mourning, so we don't listen to music. Right, semi-mourning, so we don't listen to music. Some people are careful just to not listen to live music.
I just got lost. During the counting of the Omer, it's semi-morning, but during Chol HaMoed, that counteracts the semi-morning?
Yes.
Okay.
For many people, not for everyone. So for those people who do listen to music during Chol HaMoed, they could play the piano. After the second days of Yontif, during Sfira, then those people wouldn't. And even practicing is a problem. So everybody has to ask their own.
Right, so like if it's your profession, I'm not...
I think if it's your profession, you can, but...
You have a concert coming up.
Right. But those are things. You wouldn't want to give a concert if you could not during Sphera.
No. If the concert is after.
Right, but you need to practice. Right, so that's a totally different
two
thing.
2 days later, after right. I come back.
You actually might ask if you're allowed to play during...
No, 2 days after.
I know, but I'm saying you might actually have to ask if you can play piano during Holomoid. Because you're not allowed to do expert things during Holomoid.
I know Ellen tells me on Shabbat she doesn't allow me.
No, Shabbat for sure not. For Shabbat, for sure not.
And also Chag, but
Holomoid is also a question. So I'll give you...
Really?
Yeah, it's expert things aren't permitted. So for instance, I sew. I went to FIT. I sew very well. I am not permitted to sew on Holomoid, Fashion Institute of Technology. Right, and I'm very good at sewing. I'm not permitted to sew even a button if it falls off by hand on Holomoid because I'm an expert sewer, right? Somebody who doesn't really know how to sew and a button fell off, they can make big, ugly stitches, and then an expert can fix it afterwards. But they're permitted to make big, ugly stitches just for a temporary get that button on. I'm not allowed to do that.
I would be.
Right? I'm allowed to use masking tape to put that hem back up, but I can't sew it, right? Now, I am not an expert in playing piano. I could probably plunk a plunk a plunk on piano. You might have a problem because you're an expert.
I don't have a problem because we go to my this year to my husband's family. There'll be no piano on Holomoid.
Okay, whatever.
And on Sunday night I can do it still. There will be a piano on Monday until it starts, right?
Till the end of, yes.
That's my only opportunity.
Yes, for sure you can.
Then I'm stuck for a while.
Right, then you're stuck, right. Right, so expert activity is a problem. For instance, I mean, I also bead, right? So now that I bead, when I first learned how to bead, and I was just stringing, I asked the rabbi, am I allowed to do that on Holomoid? So he said, could a 10-year-old do that without much instruction? Yes, fine, I can. Now I'm really good at it. I know how to tie tight knots. I'm good at the stringing with silk and all that stuff. Now I'm an expert, and I can't do it anymore.
You're a problem.
So I'm just saying, there's expert work you can't
do. How many expertises
do
you have?
No, but I'm just saying, if you're an expert at something, like, so I could plunge a toilet, but I shouldn't call, I mean, for a toilet it's different, you know, because you need that for public health, and, you know, then you can call somebody to fix it. But you shouldn't save a plumbing repair job for Holomoid. You're not allowed to do that. If your toilet's overflow, you can call a plumber. But if you know that your toilet's going to need work, you shouldn't say, you know, I'm really too busy before Pesach.
I'll be home.
I'll take care. I'll be home those middle days. I'll do it then. You can't do that.
You know, this could turn into a really funny script for a TV.
Yes, it could.
Because you could only do things you're bad at. So you got to
right.
just do things that they're bad at.
That would be a great perm spiel. Now, mark that down for next year.
But Holomoid Sukkot is different. Like you do everything.
No, you don't.
In Israel,
no, you don't. People are not careful.
Well,
that's what I'm trying to say. People are not careful with Chol HaMoed because we say Chol first and people are thinking Chol.
But it's not.
It's Moed. It's Moed that you're allowed to do some stuff on. But Moed is the main thing. So you're supposed to treat it like Moed, not like Chol.
You can try and talk on the phone.
Yes, you can.
Not so much emails.
Yeah, it's a question. I mean, emails are a question. Is it really writing? Probably not, technically. But yeah, you should minimize
texting.
Yeah, ask Ishai about that. I don't know about texting and emails. That's the truth. I mean, writing is its own malacha, and it's not the same malacha in texting and doing emails. So it's a different question. Okay, I hear on this page. I'll just let you look at that on your own. Is your Erev Pesach a day of Seder checklist? They made it little boxes instead of little bullets, so you can check it off. Circles.
On your page at the bottom there.
Right. Oh. So that's just straight up stuff to check off. You want to make sure one place that people often forget when they're cleaning for Pesach is their vacuum cleaner bag. That for sure you have a kazayat of chametz in because you vacuumed your whole house, right? So that you for sure have to get rid of before Pesach.
I never understood that. It's in the bag. The bag is, you know, industrial strength.
Right.
And then that's in something else.
Yeah, but still it's in your house. You can't own it. It's still in something that you own and use. So you have to get rid of it.
Going back to the owning and, like, when you sell off to someone, my husband told me that you're supposed to have your stuff packed up so that if the person who you sell it to wanted to come get it, and claim it, that they could.
Right, you can just tell them where the cabinet is.
Just go.
I mean, it would be very nice of you, and you'd be, you know, then they would want to do repeat business with you if they wanted to come carry it away. But you could say, look, I'm the type that doesn't pack it up, right? Okay. So it's in that cabinet. It all belongs to you. Gag isn't to hate, you know.
You said it to a person?
The cleaning guy, yeah, he comes
in. You mean without the rabbi?
Well, during the rabbi sells it for on our behalf.
Does he have to have a new bag in his vacuum cleaner?
To the housekeeper.
No, it's not yours. Okay.
And then you buy it back from
Yeah.
But he's
master a master.
So how much is
Nerni shop for
Rebbe Mitzvot, right? Okay. It's like a nothing.
On this list, just because I did not translate, in the middle of your Erev Pesach Day Seder list, Day of Seder checklist, in the middle of the first column is Ner Neshama, right? Set up your candles for lighting. Ner Neshama for relatives, Ner Neshama for lighting flames from. Ner Neshama is Hebrew for yahrzeit candle. So you have relatives who passed, you set up yahrzeit candles for them, for Yentif. I think both. I don't know. I don't have that.
Yeah. Isn't it only on Yitzchor?
Never
heard about
it. Yeah, it's usually followed by Yitzchor.
Before the last.
You don't do it the first time? I don't. I'm asking you because I don't have relatives that passed.
The memorial candles.
I do memorial candles.
I thought it was Yitzchor before the end.
That's what I thought. I have to check every
year.
There's four times during the year that we do it.
Plus their yard sale. So just make sure that you bought them and you're ready with your Ner Neshamas, right? That you have them.
What is B.U.?
And the Ner Neshama for lighting flames from. Everybody needs to have their own candle that's a Ner Neshama candle, a yard sale candle, a 24-hour candle, near their stove. If they have a gas stove, so they can light from that. You're allowed to transfer flames on Yentif, but you're not allowed to initiate a flame.
Yeah, the ones that the deli has work really, really well. They have these, what are they made of? They're made of something different, not regular wax. They have like a 3-day candle and a 7-day candle.
Really?
Yeah.
Nice, okay.
And what brand?
They have them at the deli.
But they have electric
three. Really, really nice.
If you have electric stove, then that's a whole different thing.
But sometimes I just buy what we call the Jesus candles at the market.
Right, right.
Oh, yeah.
The big ones in the
You just want to get them without Jesus on them.
You use any candle.
No,
it has to last.
Well,
I know, but you know,
you have any big candle that lasts three
years. Yeah, I'm very confused. You mean for the lighting of the candles?
For lighting candles for lighting your stove. But for lighting candles, for sure, you have to light candles on the second day. You have to get that flame not from a match, but from a transfer. So even if you have an electric stove, you have to have a Ner Neshama burning, and that's why the 3-day candle is an advantage if it's a 3-day Yentif, where sometimes, occasionally, a yahrzeit candle goes out in 22 hours. And that's super annoying when you then have to light, because then you have to take another yahrzeit candle and go across the street, find somebody who has a flame, and then try to get it out the door and into your house without it blowing out. And it's
if
a super pain.
If you're lucky, you have a neighbor. Like that.
Right, if you're lucky and you have a neighbor.
3-day candle. So we need the candle to last from Monday night till Thursday morning.
There is another way of Wednesday, doing it. You turn the burner.
No, Wednesday night.
You turn the burner on, and then you can drop like a piece of paper onto the burner.
If you have electric.
Right.
But I'm not sure. No, I'm not sure you can do that. I don't know. I'm not aware of that.
So 3-day
Because I would think that's initiating, but maybe it's not
if
you drop the burner.
If the burner's already on, you can do it.
It's interesting. Anyway, so you want to definitely have flame if you can. Let's see. I'm just going to go for a few more minutes.
And that's allowed?
Nuts are allowed on Passover.
All nuts, right?
Cashew
too?
Yes, all nuts are allowed as far as I know. Except peanuts are not
peanuts
nuts.
It's a bean.
Peanuts are a legume. Yeah.
I don't know why.
Right. Okay, let's just do sinks for a second. If you have stainless steel sinks, you can make them kosher for Passover. If you have plastic or porcelain sinks, you cannot make them kosher for Passover. So bathroom sinks, you don't have to worry about.
I would never understand, because you cannot avoid using your sink. How is it that you use it if it's not kosher?
You can use buckets.
Oh yeah. If you have porcelain or plastic sinks, you clean it very well. You clean it very well with cleanser, so it's spotlessly clean, sterile. You can do surgery on your sink, right? And then You either put a bucket straight in, or some people line it first with contact paper, and it's messy, and they cut a little hole for the drain, and then they put a dish basin in it. So the dish basin isn't coming into contact with the sink when the water pours, right? So they do a double liner, or they'll put a rack on the bottom and a bucket
on
top.
Can I use on a rack?
Yeah.
Can I use without a bucket? Because I have no idea how to wash it in the bucket.
No, you need the bucket. No, a rack won't do the trick. Mm-mm. You want a bucket in it. So a bucket just means like a sink liner thing. You just buy the dishes bucket.
But
it's like $2 a week.
You cannot use the sink?
If you have plastic or porcelain, you cannot use your sink. You can't make it cushion.
Do
you have a metal sink or a white sink?
White.
Right. Problem. Right. So you have to do the liner. Right. You clean it so it's very clean. And then you can get two buckets for Milchix and two if you have, two for each, so that you have one that you put your dishes in to soak, and then when you want to rinse them, you, and a rack on the bottom, and then you pick up the whole bucket full of the dishes that you want to rinse and put it down on the counter, and then you can just rinse it in the sink like that without letting your dish touch the sink anywhere. But you can't, like, you know, washing it in the sink and the water splashing and stuff. You don't want to do that. So you have your clean dishes, you wash them.
I never wash my dishes in, you know, immersed in water. I always just have a running water and I wash
one at a time.
One at a time. Uh-huh. With lots of soap. Right. And then I put it in a drying rack.
Right. So
I never soak in the water. Uh-huh. I never do that.
Right. So you probably could do that. Just, you know, a word to the Colorado friends among us. We live in a drought state.
I know.
You shouldn't do that here. New Yorkers, no problem. But in Colorado, you're not supposed to let the water
run.
But halachically, clean your sink. Yeah. Probably you should line it for splash-ups. But just put some whatever. You can do heavy duty tin foil. You can do, you know, and then you can wash it in the air like that. Now, here's good news for anybody who has a dishwasher.
Yeah.
Not easy to cash your dishwasher. However, if you run it through empty with a little detergent, you can use it as a drying rack for your Passover dishes. And that's really nice. Yeah, right? That's really helpful because at least you have, like, you pull it out and you can wash your dishes by hand and dry them there, and you don't have, like, a huge drying rack on your counter. Yeah, that's Rabbi Heisler. 100% Scroll K certified. You can do that. Run it through with detergent empty, and then you can use it as a drying rack for your Passover dishes.
I scored. A couple years ago, I had a new dishwasher installed before
Pesach. Because you cannot use it.
Right.
So what's wrong with porcelain and plastic? It absorbs gluten?
It absorbs chametz and doesn't fully release it. Yeah, it doesn't fully release it.
So how do you know? The metal is more like gray, right?
Metal is the metal thing. Yeah, it looks like this.
Yeah.
This stuff, yeah. Yeah. So if you have stainless steel, then you can kosher it. You kosher it by pouring boiling water over all of it. So you clean it, spotless.
So if you would have a new kitchen, if you were designing your new kitchen.
Stainless steel sinks.
Stainless steel sink.
Stainless steel dishwasher. The problem is the racks usually aren't stainless steel, so you have to buy separate racks, which are really expensive.
Stainless steel countertops probably too.
Stainless steel can or marble. Also, you can kosher for Pesach.
So, dreams.
Yeah. I have formica, so I just cover with plastic. But, that's dreams. So, stainless steel. So you just make a big splashy mess.
Not even granite?
Granite, I think also you've got granite and marble you can kosher.
Yeah.
But not
coriander.
Not coriander, which looks like that, but it's really plastic.
Mm-hmm.
Right,
you
cannot.
Coriander. It's a fabricated something.
It looks like stone, but it's not.
It's got polymers and stuff. It's really plastic. It's in the category of plastic.
But Caesar stone is.
Corian, I think.
Caesar stone is kosher.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, because it's made in Israel.
Uh-huh. Oh.
Which one?
Caesar stone.
Made in Israel?
Yeah, just if you're looking for new kitchen stuff, Caesar stone. Mm-hmm.
Caesar stone is kosherable. Okay. I'm just repeating that for the recording.
Lift arm on ice snake.
Right, so that you don't want your... If you want to take ice on Yantif, you don't want to cause your ice maker to make new ice because you emptied it. So therefore, you lift the arm on it so that it's no longer weighing and making ice for you. You're permitted to make your own ice, but you're not permitted to cause the electricity to turn on to make ice in your ice maker. So you disable it before Yantif on Shabbos.
This is a PhD.
Yeah, it's a lot of stuff, right? It's a lot of stuff.
Every time I see how much I don't know.
Right, yeah, it's a lot of stuff. Let's see, what else do we want to make sure we get
here? I'm invited, like I did last year, but usually we're invited to my husband's family, but I think it would be offensive for me to start telling her.
Absolutely. You're not allowed to tell other people what to do.
I could bring a nerd for 3 days. It's a good idea.
Yeah, you could do
and
that.
Then,
but it's super hard.
Offended, but I cannot start saying.
No, you can't.
Yeah, sure.
No, I mean, so this is why for Passover, many people don't eat in other people's homes.
Actually, so it's not that I'm going to a reform place. Uh-huh. But still.
Right. So this is why people don't eat in each other's homes. Even people who trust each other, love each other, all year round, they'll eat each other's food. But for Passover, a lot of people don't eat out.
But not out. This is family reunion in their house. Or sleeping.
No, I'm saying out of their house.
Yeah, but then you don't see your family.
Correct.
Like you have family.
No, so usually family. No, usually family you do. No, family you will eat in a family member's house, maybe. Depending on if you trust them or not.
But they're kosher.
But I'm just saying that there are people who trust each other's kashrus year round, but part of the we're allowed to go crazy on Pesach includes not eating at our friends' houses and not being offended by that. If somebody will only have fresh fruit in your house, who usually will have a bowl of soup in your house, but Pesach they come and only eat fruit, then you're not. Don't take offense because Passover we're allowed to go crazy and people who trust you still won't eat in your house often on Pesach. So it's just, that's a place. So, and a lot of people who are super careful themselves will not eat even in their close friends' houses on
Pesach. Well, my family is more Orthodox, so that's good, but I will not check if she did a toothbrush on the fridge.
No, that's not your business.
But this is for me.
You trust their kashrus, you trust their kashrus, right? You do not ask them how they cleaned. That's not your job.
So when it comes to fruit bowls, so I would wash the fruit bowls because who knows what dropped into it, but if I wash it out thoroughly, can I use it for Passover?
So here's the thing. We do go crazy on Pesach. So even if we use a year-round sponge on a Pesach thing by mistake, we usually then put that thing aside for year-round and don't use it for Pesach or we kosher it. I found this out when I washed a cutting board with a regular sponge and asked the Shaila, and yes, the cutting board was now year-round and not Pesach. So we don't.
The fruit bowls get put away.
That's right. You put away some people even put away their vases because they put their vases on their chametz stick table. Mm-hmm. So even though there's no chametz, some people will put away their vases as well. So not everybody has to go that far, but certainly a fruit bowl that you're washing and the regular stuff, we wouldn't use that for Pesach. But you can kosher it. If it's all glass.
How do you?
Right, so that's what I wanted to get to. You tell me how long you want to go because 9:15.
I'm very tired, but
I'll just do another a few minutes because really we have to clean up. We can do a little bit more next time, but let me just tell you about koshering. Okay, so
where?
Koshering is the bottom of the second page of the 3-page packet. I'm just going to go for like 5 more minutes. I'm sorry.
Fine. I just need to grab the keys out of my husband's pocket before he left with my keys.
So I just want to do koshering quickly. So I'm not going to do we're not going to go in depth, but. Conceptually, there's 2 steps to koshering. The first step is to clean it very well. Clean your thing very well and let it sit clean for 24 hours. And after that, you purge. Now, how do you purge? There's 4 different ways. These are the halachic terms. Hagala is immersion in boiling water. Irui rotchim is pouring boiling water on it. Libun kal is making metal hot enough to burn paper on the other side. I'll go back over this in a minute. Libun gamor is making the metal glow. The 5th method is for glass, and that's soaking in cold water for 3 days, changing the water every 24 hours. So you buy pretty wine glasses at an estate sale, and you want them for your Pesach table. No problem. Fill up your bathtub with water, put all the glasses in it, every 24 hours, drain the water and refill it for 3 days, and it's kosher. La Pesach.
I was told you couldn't kosher wine glasses.
Well, it turns out.
Also, if you do the cold.
Ask your rabbi.
The cold bathtub?
Cold.
Then you don't have to do the boiling?
It's cold.
No, you can't boil with a glass.
Right.
So you crack it.
You're right.
Right, no, you cannot. Yeah.
No. That's an interesting bathtub use.
Yeah. So you can kosher your crystal.
If you don't have your fish in.
Right. Kosher crystal. So let's say you have fruit bowls or serving plates, those kinds of things that you want to kosher. You can glass. It has to be all glass with no metal on it, so no gold rims. or anything like that, but straight 100% pieces of glass, you can kasher that way. Now for metal things, okay, so let's just look, and I'll go back to those ways of purging. Things that we don't kasher for Pesach include china, pottery, earthenware, rubber, non-stick and Teflon-coated things, plastic dishes, enameled pots, pans and ladles, and utensils with wood or plastic handles. These are things we do not kasher for Pesach. You can't make it from chametz to Pesach. I, however, a few years ago, bought a huge nonstick frying pan for Pesach, for fleishiks, and then somebody made matzah bryanit with butter. So it was treif, but pesedik. So I was able to kasher it. It was still pesedik. It was just treif. So you can't make it from chametz stick to Pesach, but you could kasher it if you're just making it not treif anymore.
Why was it treif?
Treif is meat and milk cooked in the same thing.
Which meat did you put in?
It was a meat pot, a meat frying pan that somebody put butter in. So it made a treif, but it was pesedik. Yeah, it was pesedik. Wow. So
you could make
that, yeah, because it's still pesedik. You could flip it back to boiling water because it had the nonstick coating. If it's a regular frying pan, the way that you kosher a regular frying pan that's not nonstick is by flipping it upside down. You do lipun kal. You put it over your flame, and you put a piece of paper on top of it, on the back, and as soon as that turns brown, that's called lipun kal, the paper turns brown, and it's kosher, le Pesach.
Anything about the handle, do you do it both sides?
Right, that's a good question. I'm not sure about handles for Pesach. Would have to be a metal handled thing. So because if it has a plastic handle, you can't do
what
it.
What I do with metal stuff, I put it in the boiling water. Is that okay?
Yeah, but not if it has a plastic handle.
No plastic. No, right, just all metal.
Yeah. So generally, so let's go back up to the ways to purge, right? Haggalah is the easiest way, right?
Well, immersion in boiling water.
So you make it, take a big pot, your biggest pot. It does
sometimes
not.
If it fits, you know, you
sometimes
can
you have to do it two sides, right?
Two sides, yeah.
Right, mm-hmm. To be able to kasher, you have to flip it over. You can do that. And then you put cold water on it, or put it in a bowl of cold water.
What's really good is getting like a silicone glove.
Oh, well, that's a good idea.
Right in the boiling water.
How smart is that? Silicone glove, yeah, because I use the tongs and things drop. And yeah, that's such a good idea.
Yeah, I ordered this cool one off of Amazon.
Very smart.
Did you say that you can kasher Teflon pans and pots?
No.
Not from chametz to Pesach.
But
only within. You can kasher them chametz to chametz or Pesach to Pesach.
And how do you do that?
So ask. You should ask. Boiling water will do the trick. If you do Haggalah with a Teflon coated thing, that will make it kosher. But you can't make it kosher to Pesach. However,
I had no idea. If I traced something up and it was nonstick, I just, you know.
No, you can kasher.
You need different pots for Pesach, mm-hmm. Not the same.
Different.
Unless you want to kosher them. I have some big soup pots that I kosher. So another way to kosher that's super easy but makes your pots not pretty is to put it in the self-clean oven. So I do that. I do that with my grates on my stove. I put them in the self-clean oven. And I put in a baking pan, like a chicken roasting pan, and a big soup pot I put in the self-clean oven. They're stainless steel. They'll never be shiny again. It makes them a mottled look. So it takes away the prettiness and you can't get it back because the metal's been changed, its nature has changed a little bit by going in such a hot oven. But it's kosher l'Pesach and I do it every year.
Because where's room for everything double triple?
Right.
If you do that with Pyrex, does it weaken the Pyrex?
I don't think you can do it. You cannot kosher Pyrex as far as I understand. Yeah. Oh, not Passover. Yeah, you can do that in the self-clean oven. Does it weaken it? I don't think so. I've done it before in China. Some China makes it. Some China doesn't.
You put China in the self-clean oven?
Yeah.
The best is not to eat for 9 days.
Right. So for me, it did work, but it did weaken the structure of the China. One time I served hot rice and the plate just broke in my hands. And I knew it was from the self-cleaning.
I've had things just shatter.
Yeah. So you can do it. For anybody who wants to kosher something valuable, their grandmother's china, you take it to a special oven that heats very slowly and cools very slowly.
It has such
I don't know. Rhythm. I don't know. But I know that's how you kosher.
But not mikvah. Mikvah is for new dishes.
Mikvah, right? Well, mikvah is for any dish that didn't go to the mikvah that has to go to the mikvah. And only things that are rendered in fire have to go to the mikvah. So that's only glass and metal. No plastic, no earthenware, no porcelain.
If I buy something new for Pesach, it has to go to the mikvah?
Yes, if it's glass or metal, it has to go to the mikvah. Yeah. That's why you want to start now. That's why we're doing this class now. Yeah, so buy your stuff now so you can take
to
the mikvah.
To
Yeah. Okay, so things that we do kosher for Pesach is your glass, real glass only, not with polymers in it, so Pyrex is a problem. Metal, solid pieces without overlays or crevices. You would kosher that by hagala or libun. Wood by sanding, if you have a wood cut. So we don't do this really, but let's say you live in the shtetl and you have a wood table that you're eating on, right? You can't go to Walmart and buy plastic to cover it. You sand the top off.
Oh my gosh.
That's how you kosher it. And then you can just use your regular wooden countertop or a table. Stuff that we trafed up during the year. Okay, so this is when we kosher our pile of stuff that we made mistakes with during the year. I personally have to do it twice a year because I have a bunch of teens, but not so many anymore. So now I just have a smaller pile. But usually I do it Pesach and Rosh Hashanah, kosher all the stuff. However, once something's kosher, if it's one of those kosherable materials, it's kosher la Pesach. So you can use that stuff for Pesach and then take it for year-round. This is also the only time of year you could switch something. Let's say you bought a big pot for your milchik soups, and you realize you never make milchik soups, but you made one 3 years ago, and that pot's milchik, and you wish you would have made it fleishik. Kosher it now, and you can switch it. You can't just switch things back and forth. Let's say you have one beautiful serving spoon, and you make it every week, milchik or fleishik. You'll forget, is it milchik this week or fleishik this week? You can't do that. So Pesach is the only time we can switch things.
But if you're using it, let's say milchik, and then you make a mistake, and now it's treif.
Right, then you can kosher it. And let's say that happens, right? You it's June, and somebody put, you know, you're making a parv soup, and somebody thought, you know, this would be really good with the chicken broth, and they pour it right in, and you're like, oh, it's a milchik pot, and they made it treif, right? Then you can kosher that pot and make it fleishik. No problem. If it's treif, you can kosher it, make it whatever you want. But if it's not treif, if it's still milchik, but you wish it was fleishik, Pesach is the time to flip it.
Before.
It has to be before Pesach. You can't kosher anything on Pesach.
Are you going to review this next week?
I wasn't planning on it.
But many people didn't come.
Right, I was not planning on it. Next week is a different class. Next week there's no class, because I will not be here. Right, it's the week after that.
I know.
Yeah.
I would have our Monday class.
Oh my god.
Monday class, I will be here for that. Yes.
Did you have a class?
We have to clean
last this
week.
Monday?
Yeah, this week. Yeah, it's on. It's online. Yeah, you can get it online.
You're going to send what online?
No, I have my Monday class is online that Yana missed. I'm going to put this online too. So you can just look on my website, abideoftorah.com, I have a new Passover tab under holidays.
Can you?
Audio, holidays, Passover. This will be there.